Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you'll find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each podcast episode, you've been hearing stories about conflict, the impact it had on the lives of those involved, how resolution was reached, and the lessons learned from both the conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details may be altered to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core of the conflict and its resolution. Now, joining me today, and I am really, really blessed to know our guest. I mean, Claudia Haggadis Long has so many accomplishments. I could use the entire first segment listing them, but let me just get into just a little bit about the background that. Claudia is not just a mediator, and I'm not sure you're doing arbitrations, are you, Claudia?
Rarely. I do it like one a year.
Okay. So, but primarily a mediator, but also she is a novelist. She has written 5 novels, I believe, now more.
8 published, 2 more coming.
Wow. Okay. It's hard for me to keep up. Okay. And one of them is in the process of being made into a movie. I read 9/10 of the Law and was thoroughly, thoroughly entertained. I highly recommend anyone who enjoys a good story reading this. The books that Claudia has written have rich historical settings that show the lives and loves and lusts of women immersed in a society that they want to be a part of, but as themselves. They involve Jewish women living as Catholics in colonial Mexico various other professional female writers struggling to effect change in the early 20th century, mature sisters, daughters of a Holocaust survivor, solving both the secrets of their mother's past and the very current mysteries of the present. Now, this is all on top of a very, very distinguished legal career and career as a mediator and arbitrator. Claudia is also the one of the leading alternative dispute resolution neutrals in the Bay Area and specializes in disputes involving business, construction, employment, probate, real estate and banking, wage and hour, and in addition, Indian Native American tribal council disputes. although Claudia is not a member of any tribe or council. Claudia is successfully, not surprisingly, by the way, successfully mediated between tribe and non-tribe parties regarding leases, casinos. Let's face it, there's a wide variety of background that Claudia can draw upon and has drawn upon both in her practice and in her writing. And she is also fluent in Spanish and French and can conduct mediations entirely in Spanish when necessary. So with that, let's get down to the story that we're going to be talking about today. And welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution, Claudia.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be back, so to speak. It's what you always want to be saying, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you a story since that's kind of what I do.
Perfect.
You know? The names have been changed to protect the not so innocent, and a couple of the facts have been altered to fit the format, but this is actually a case that I mediated, and I was surprised, let's just say. It's actually a combination of a couple of cases, to tell you the truth. So let's start with Annie, caregiver Annie, okay? She's not the most important person in our story, so why are we starting with her? Annie connected daughter, let's call her Diane, daughter Diane, to, actually, Annie is our important person here, I'm sorry. It's Katie who is not. Katie had cared for daughter Diane's friend's aunt for 18 months before the aunt died. A year later, daughter Diane needed someone to help with her mother, who was 88, still mobile, somewhat independent, but needed some help with day-to-day activities of life, cooking, taking out the trash, vacuuming. And although she no longer drove, mother knew how to work Uber and DoorDash apps and shopped online for all her necessities, took an Uber to the local JCC for her book and movie clubs. And caregiver Katie suggested that caregiver Annie, a relative, work 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, helping daughter Diane with her mom. Katie advised daughter Diane that Annie charged $25 an hour. Katie also asked that the checks be made out to her, and she would pay Annie because Annie didn't have a bank account. Okay, so we get to the first day. Annie arrives with Katie the first day. Neither daughter Diane nor mother had ever met Annie, so introductions were made. Annie was kindly, fit, strong, and immediately went to work. She prepared a delicious lunch for the four of them, and everyone was happy. After 2 weeks, Annie told daughter Diane via a text that she'd been evicted from her apartment, and since mother had a spare room, could she stay there until she got a new place? In exchange, she'd be available to mother if she needed any help beyond the 4 hours per day. Daughter Diane and mother agreed. Then Annie also asked at this point be paid weekly, directly, and in cash, cutting out Katie from the equation. Daughter wasn't happy about that since that meant a trip to the bank every week to get $500 in cash for Annie, but she agreed. Annie moved in, everyone seemed happy. That is, until on a rainy day in January, mother slipped on the walkway and fell. Miraculously, her hip wasn't broken, but she was deeply bruised and couldn't walk. She had serious pain in her back. She was in agony when she changed positions. Ultimately, a fracture in her sacrum turned up through a CT scan, but not until after a week of excruciating pain went by. The only treatment for that is rest and time. Everyone agreed it was a gift that Annie was still staying in the spare room and agreed that for now, Annie didn't have to go apartment hunting. She could live at the house and stay there until mother recovered. Annie told daughter Diane that since mother couldn't do food shopping anymore online while she was in pain and on medication, she would take it over and ask for and received a food budget. She also had daughter Diane supply the credit card necessary for Annie to use Uber and Lyft since she didn't have a car and would need one to go shopping. Frustrated by having repeated trips to the bank for cash, daughter Diane gave Annie a credit card to use for all the home expenses. Well, you could probably guess where all this is going, but you wouldn't even beginning to scratch the surface. Ultimately, mother did not get better. She soon needed help with the toilet, the shower, and even though a home health aide visited twice a week and daughter Diane visited and helped several times a week, the bulk of the care fell to Annie. After 9 months, Annie informed daughter Diane that her niece was coming to the United States to visit, and could the niece stay with Annie at mother's house? The positive to that would be that Annie would now have help in the increasing heavy demands on mother's care. Daughter Diane agreed, and the niece arrived. You can see where that's going, but there's more.
Oh, there's always more, and when you keep adding the characters, it multiplies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the niece's ex visit extended from an expected 2 weeks until, after 2 months, the niece's boyfriend started spending the night. Annie would sleep in the living room on the couch, and the niece and her boyfriend used the bedroom. Mother, who was now essentially limited to her room, the bathroom, and occasional forays onto the deck on nice days, complained that there was a smell of smoke and men's voices, and that she was scared. Daughter Diane ultimately confronted Annie and told her, "Look, the niece has to go." Annie informed daughter Diane that if her niece went, she went. Daughter Diane began frantically looking into nursing homes for mother, but before she could find anything and dismiss Annie, which she fully intended to do, mother fell on the deck. This time she wasn't as lucky, and her hip and her wrist were both broken. She refractured the sacrum. She was briefly unconscious. After they admitted her to the hospital, mother went from bad to worse. Transferred to a care facility, mother began to hallucinate and ultimately succumbed to a stroke. Mother died 4 weeks after her fall. During the hospitalization, daughter Diane had texted Annie, keeping her updated on mother's condition, and remained hopeful that her mother would recover after mother's death, but before the funeral a week later, Annie, her niece, and her boyfriend moved out. Annie attended the funeral, brought food, and cried with the family. So, what happened? A month after the funeral, Annie sued mother's estate and the daughter personally for approximately $1.2 million for failure to pay wages, wage theft, delay penalties, failure to enforce lunch breaks, and punitive damages, citing the applicable labor code sections.
Okay, so that sets the scene for the aftermath of what became a very complicated situation. You've indicated that there were some conflicts during the time the mother was there, the niece moving in and things of that nature. What I'm not hearing is that there were conflicts of, well, I need to be paid more, or anything along those lines of the workload is too much, or I'm working more hours, or how were hours kept? Who kept track of the hours and how?
Well, you're talking like a lawyer there,
I'm sorry.
because what actually happened was that there were no discussions along those lines during that entire time. Because in daughter Diane's view, she was giving room and board, paying for all the food, all the groceries, transportation, Lyft and Uber whenever she needed it, and accommodating her caregiver Annie's niece, and allowing her to live basically all the expenses of life taken care of right there. And Annie never raised it either. But the minute she mother died, the lawsuit was as if it were ready to be filed as soon as the money was there, mother's estate.
Wow. Well, we are going to be taking a break right now. I'm Len Levy. We are on Masters of Dispute Resolution and enjoying a story which is going to continue after the break, as told by Claudia Hagedis Long.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Well, welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Lynn Levy, and we are talking with Claudia Hagedis Long about the aftermath of a mother's death, a caretaker, and a very complicated situation, and not atypical. Is that right, Claudia?
Yeah, definitely not atypical as our families age and the incredible expenses of care go up. And, you know, California has a very specific law governing the payment of caregivers, and it's to ensure that caregivers are fairly and appropriately compensated for all of their time when they're on duty, whether they're asleep overnight or watching television or on the phone or actually doing the heavy lifting of care, on the theory that otherwise you or I would be doing that work. And we're being allowed to pursue our lives in exchange for these caregivers doing this job.
Which gives rise to the clash that has taken place in this story. And what were the perspectives that led to this dispute? What was the dispute? How was it framed, I should
say?
It
was framed as a wage and hour claim.
Okay.
It was under this very specific statute, Labor Codes 1454 and California Labor Code 1194 and 515. You are specifically required to pay for all of the time that is used. And so there are labor lawyers, mostly in Southern California, who specialize in this area. And as soon as the person for whom the care is being given dies, they swoop in and sweep up the caregiver and bring a lawsuit for failure to pay.
And in this case, I think you mentioned they also brought in the daughter under theory she was the an employer, correct?
Right. The statute, Labor Code 1451 C1, actually, if you want to be specific, defines domestic work employer to mean anybody, including corporate officers or executives who directly or indirectly or through an agent or any person, including through the services of a third party employer, temp service, or staffing agency, employs or exercises control over the wages, hours, or working conditions of a domestic work employee, which means that the daughter, who was the person texting saying, yeah, okay, I'll get the cash, I'll pay you in, you know, I'll transfer the money, I'll do whatever, here's an Uber card, here's a credit card, that made her an employer. So it's her personal liability as well as the estate of the mother.
Coming into the mediation, and I'm sure immediately after being served with the lawsuit, the daughter, there might have been some very strong emotions coming up from the daughter. Was that was brought into the mediation? Is that correct?
That's putting it mildly, my friend, because her mother was barely in the ground before this lawsuit was served, and our friend caregiver Annie was there at the funeral, crying and bringing food and one thing and the other. And the process server was right on her heels, basically. So let me set the scene for you on that mediation, if you will. It's over, we're over Zoom, and caregiver Annie and her lawyer are in the lawyer's conference room sharing a screen. Okay, that becomes a little bit significant down the road. In on the other side, we have the lawyer for Diane, and in one room, and Diane herself on another screen from home. Okay, so they are in the more traditional way of doing Zoom separately. After, I introduced myself, and I've been briefed on the facts. I knew the law, and I knew that these cases are really hard to settle, and they're heartbreakers. So after, a group discussion in which I go over confidentiality and how I'm going to work the Zoom rooms and how the fact that I keep everything that's said in a private caucus confidential, unless the lawyer specifically tells me to bring something out of the room, so that, and I do that to encourage honesty, because if you think I'm going to be blabbing everything you say unless you make sure you tell me that this particular fact should not be disclosed, you're not going to tell me anything. Okay, so once I go through all that, I said, I'm going to separate you out into two groups unless you want to stay together. No, separate us. And I'm going to start with daughter Diane and her lawyer.
And their perspective is.
Wait, I am interrupted at that point by counsel for the caregiver. Says, shouldn't you be starting with us? We're the plaintiffs. And I thought, okay, all right, somebody's going to try to run this show. I said, actually, no, we're not. Separate them out. All right. I come into the Zoom room, and it's only been, what, 30 seconds since I've transferred each person to each room? Daughter Diane is furious. She is raging. Hi, everybody. Let's talk about the case, And now, daughter Diane is a nice-looking lady, all dressed properly, and clearly, she's a product development specialist. So she works on computers and various things. A professional. Language that you cannot even imagine. I couldn't believe I had to look at that blankety blank blank on the screen. How dare she? Mother was barely cold. She and I'm like, oh dear. Okay, we're going to be diffusing some emotion for the first hour today. And ultimately, I said, daughter Diane, I didn't call her daughter, but that's what we're calling her today. Why don't you tell me how you met Annie? In other words, one of the things that I like to do is if there's a lot of emotion, you don't want to say stop. People are entitled to their emotions, but it helps to ground them in a non-emotional fact. So let's go back to the beginning. How did you meet caregiver Annie? So I thought that would be a nice, a grounding, thoughtful way to start. Boy, was I wrong. Because if you will recall the first sentence of this story, caregiver Katie introduced daughter Diane to caregiver Annie because Katie had taken care of her friend's mother's aunt. Unfortunately, daughter didn't know because this was aunt had, her friend had moved away. Caregiver Katie had sued the friend and the friend's family for the same thing. And this was before she introduced them to Annie. It was a setup, in a sense. And so I said, how did you meet Annie? Well, that stream of expletive, Katie introduced her to me. And I met blankety blank Katie when she had taken care of my friend's aunt. And it turns out that Katie sued my friend and the aunt's estate for this exact same thing, only I didn't know it because that happened after I hired Annie.
Please tell me it was the same lawyer.
It was. It was.
What a
Anyway,
guess.
what a guess, you know? And so Annie knew going into this that at the end of the day, there was a pot of gold.
Wow. And so the motivation just added to the anger, and the expletive salted conversation that you had to endure as the mediator.
Yes. And so, like I said, I thought I would ask because I like to ground things in a little couple of facts so that we can just move on, you know? Okay, so we weathered that storm. And I said, okay, I got to do something else. Okay, here, what else am I going to do? Said, tell me about your mother. And that allowed her to talk about her mother, where she was from, how she'd grown up. And that's eventually got her focused on what we had here. The lawyer, her lawyer kind of was letting all this happen. You know, she wasn't interfering in any way. She was just saying, you know, okay, this is. And at the end, when I finally had daughter Diane calm and telling the story, finished with her story, I turned to the lawyer and said, do you have anything to add? And from a factual point of view, because the first hour is you always spend gathering facts. And I thought, she said, well, not from a factual point of view, and I do understand the law, and I've advised my client. Let me know after you talk to plaintiff. That's normal. Sure, of course, I go to the next room, right? No biggie.
In the next room, what are you observing? Are you observing kind of a smug, we got him, or what are you observing? Any emotions?
Well, okay, so my next stop is the plaintiff and her lawyer, right? He had already said, you don't just start, why don't you should start with us. Okay, so I was a little prepared. I zoom into that room. I'm my usual jovial self, you know, hi, now it's your chance to tell me your story. And I say, and Annie, I'm going to want to hear from you so that you can tell me how this all happened, how you met, give me some perspective on you, so that you, the lawyer interrupts. My client will not be speaking.
Oh, I love when that happens. It's just
Said, well, you know, it is her case. My client will not be speaking. I have done hundreds of these, and I do not allow my clients to speak.
that puts a damper on some of the tools that you can use. How did you deal with that?
I said, well, I said, you're paying. I actually said that. I said, so we'll do it your way. All right, what do you want to tell me? He says, it's in my brief. And he says, the law is clear. We do thousands of these cases in my office. And the law is absolutely clear. She worked 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She's entitled to overtime at the end of the 10th hour on, you know, on the first day per day. And when she hits 40 hours a week, she's entitled to overtime for all the rest of the time, asleep or awake through the weekends. And furthermore, and I'm like, okay, what's going to be the furthermore here? You know, we're going to ask for punitive damages. Why are you going to ask for punitive? Because this is wage theft. It's a crime. And when you commit a crime, your victim's entitled to punitive damages. So we want $1.2 million. And I said, okay. And you're not going to let me talk to your client. Absolutely not. Bring me an offer.
Okay, I want to get to what the resolution was. There was a resolution, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You did get it settled.
I
You
did.
did get it settled. And settling these kinds of cases don't happen by accident. So we're going to be right back after a word from the American Institute of Mediation. We will continue this discussion. I need to know what happened. You need to know what happened. Let's take a break. Thank you.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. My guest is Claudia Agatis Long, author, mediator, and very, very good storyteller. And we're about to hear more. So we're in a mediation. We've got a plaintiff's attorney, wage and hour attorney, who specializes in that, knows the law, and is going to tell you exactly how that mediation is going to go. And you're going to have to deal with that. How did you deal with it?
It's like reaching into the bag of tricks here, because every mediator brings their own personal perspective and personality to things. So while you might have handled it in a more thoughtful and orderly way, I tend to look at how I'm feeling about all this too, you know? And so I had to take a few deep breaths when the lawyer said all that to me. And I said, well, you know, all right, so you just want a number. He said, this is all it is numbers. And I said, well, do you have an opening demand? He goes, yeah, what point are $1.2 million, don't you understand? And I'm like, you know, I said to him, I'm not the enemy, so stop treating me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a little taken aback. Like, oh, well, okay. In mediation, everybody has to compromise. And, you know, that $1.2 million has a lot in there that you might not get. And I said, we can get out our calculators and figure out what the minimum amount your client might recover is. There are a few facts that I think you need to know. And he goes, well, what are they? And I said, not at liberty to tell you.
Wow.
And so he said, well, you know, you can't make threats if you don't tell me what they are. I said, true enough, right? I said, so let's get the discussion rolling. If you want to talk numbers, we'll talk numbers. But I think you need to have a frank conversation with your client about what actually happened there. And he's, well, if you're not going to tell me, and, you know, a little more bluster, one thing and the other. Okay. I go back to the daughter, the daughter Diane. Let's talk about how this is affecting you. And she said, it's driving me crazy. I can't sleep at night. My boyfriend doesn't even want to talk to me anymore because that's all I talk about is this. I said, let's see if we can clear some of that for you. Let's see if we can give you your life back. You know, you spent a lot of time caring for and loving your mother, and you did the right thing for her. The law is not always logical. This is why you need to focus on money. I said, if you don't mind my asking, which I was going to ask anyway, what is the size of the estate? Because if this is a drop in the bucket, and I'm thinking if this is a drop in the bucket to them, all right. But if this is like the mom left, you know, her condo, which, you know, is probably worth about $800,000, and, you know, a couple of pieces of jewelry and some brown furniture and a china set no next generation even wants to even look at. You know, it's two different stories. So she names an amount that is, you know, fairly sizable, but not, I mean, this $1.2 million would be a devastation. Something less than that would not be.
Okay.
And so I said, you know, you're going to have to figure out a way to spend some money here to get rid of this. So let's talk about making an offer just to get the ball rolling.
Can I interrupt here? I just want to ask, the person who is going to be paying money in almost any mediation has to perceive risk. Did she have a clear perception of where this could go? Did you get into any kind of discussions about the risks that were attendant to not settling the case?
Yes, very much so. Things that happens when you have that big wheelhouse, as you've mentioned, where you have many, many different areas that you work in, is that you have to trust that the lawyers know their business. You know, at some point, probably before this part of the conversation had taken place, I would have asked her lawyer, who had briefed the case as well, you understand that how the law is written here? Absolutely, yes, I understand the law. So how are you going to approach the unpaid wages issue? Because that's for the lawyer to address. One of the things that is most difficult for me, I don't have any problem really dealing with the angry jerk in the other room. I don't have any problems dealing with, you know, the crying person and, you know, Diane, furious and angry. What I have a problem with is when the lawyers don't know the law in their own case. It's not my role to teach them. It is my role to have a discussion with them. Let's analyze. Okay, what about this? And, you know, I bring a perspective of, you know, I've been practicing for 45 years. So I bring a perspective to these things. I can say, well, have you thought about this aspect of the law? Have you considered how that might apply? But I don't want to be the person who says to the lawyer, no, the law is this, not that. Unless it's blatant, I think it's overreaching to me. In this case, that is more of a roundtable discussion, me and the lawyer and the client saying, okay, so how do you think this is going to apply? What's your best case scenario here? What are the areas of this rather draconian wage law? What are the areas that you can defeat? Mm-hmm. So we do have that discussion. And at that point, but I'm still in this moment dealing with the daughter feeling overwhelmed and upset and has been for 4 or 5 months now, you know, and she's grieving. As I say, you know, you're grieving your mother, mm-hmm. and it's a terrible loss. And to be faced with this in this moment in time is incredibly difficult. And that's why you have your good lawyer who's going to help you make decisions here. You know, but you have to acknowledge that the person is grieving and in mourning, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes a long time to recover from that.
And to make decisions during that period of time becomes even more difficult and the problems become magnified. With the idea that the attorney has advise the client with respect to risk, then did you then go in with an offer?
I did. I went in with an offer that was a somewhat lower percentage of the $1.2 million than I had hoped, but at least it was an offer. It was tricky because when I went into the plaintiff's room, I remember now I'm not being allowed to have a discussion with Annie. So I don't know if she's in it for the gold or she's doing this because Katie put her up to it or how she sees things. So I say to the lawyer, let me have a sidebar with you. And I always tell people in the beginning that I do sidebar. It's a part of my techniques. It works very well. So if you don't mind asking Miss Annie here to leave the conference room, since they're not even, I can't move them to another Zoom room because they're sharing a room here.
Right.
And to my great relief, he was fine with that because as far as he's concerned, she doesn't really exist as a person. I can tell that this is just another pile of money waiting to happen, you know?
Right. Right. So
Annie leaves the room and I say, Joe, whatever, what can we really do here? Just like between you and me, what can we actually do to settle this case? Because there's no way that daughter Diane is going to pay even half of what you're asking for. And usually you get back, Yeah, it's a tough one. I know these situations are hard. And yeah, I think Annie understands that she's, if we do actually the calculations, a lot of it, her niece was doing, and they did go out for, they went for a week to, San Diego to, so that the niece could see other parts of California. So yeah, we're going to have to do some number crunching in the end, He says, I do this because I believe in getting people paid. And this is my goal in life. And you approve it. He starts a privileged, and he uses a religious slur.
Great.
And I said, look, you better stop that right now. I'm going to end this mediation if you don't stop it. And you're behaving inappropriately, you're rude, and I will not tolerate it. I don't think anybody had ever said that to him. And it was a risk because if I end the mediation, then the daughter doesn't get a settlement and the other. And absolutely inappropriate. And I will not tolerate it. I said, besides, you know nothing about me. And so this was personal at that point. I said, so I am going to take a short break and I will be back and we will be discussing your counter demand. And we will discuss nothing further. I mean, I had smoke coming out of my ears, baby.
I can sense that in a big way, and there are times when the attempts to take over process to a degree that is insulting to, quite frankly, and to be professional and maintain composure is sometimes difficult.
Yes.
But as you point out, it's absolutely necessary because otherwise the interests of neither party are going to be satisfied. But it
Absolutely.
sounds like this attorney is not interested in advancing whatever interests his client has. It's kind of a perversion of the getting to yes. It's not advancing the client's interests, it's advancing the lawyer's interest in winning as big as possible.
I can deal with any of this, but the minute he used that slur, I shut it down. I left the Zoom room, And when I came back, I said, are you prepared to make a civil counteroffer? I was ice the rest of the time. Now you can't use that word anymore, but you know what I mean. I was so cold to him. It was, he made a counter, and I turned to his client and I said, are you okay with that counter? And he said, I told you, you're not supposed to speak with my client. I do need her approval. She was obviously totally intimidated. And we went back and forth. We crunched some numbers and ended up at a number that everybody could live with. But it was one of the most difficult situations that I've handled from the perspective of keeping myself out of it, but laying down what my ground rules were for civil behavior. Now, we have a civility requirement in California, you know that. And we have a snitch rule too. But what happens in mediation stays in mediation, and it is absolutely, he violated civility, but my ethical obligation is not to report it.
I've had attorneys say, I don't want you to convey offers or demands in the presence of my client. And that's somewhat uncomfortable. But I can justify that from a standpoint of, or assuming that he knows or she knows the client and how the client is going to hear it. Because for example, sometimes the client's perception of coming down from an initial demand is, well, I've demanded $1.2 million. I'm giving up. If I go down $600,000, I've lost $600,000. You never had the $600,000. You may not have even been entitled to the $600,000. Again, we're talking about what an attorney's goal is. And you, as a mediator, perceive the attorney's goal is to simply go for the numbers and not have you talk to the client. That's going to make your job a little bit more difficult.
Absolutely. Although many lawyers Most lawyers, I mean, the reason I picked this one to tell you about is because it was so odd, but most lawyers have a very good handle on what their case is worth in settlement versus what their case is worth in litigation. There's no high and there's no low in settlement. There's a resolution. In litigation, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so in generally, if a lawyer is controlling process or is controlling negotiation, that's okay because generally they do have an excellent perspective on the value of their case. And underneath it all, this lawyer did know the value of his case. He knew that in settlement he wasn't going to get punitive damages. He knew that there was a certain amount of time that Annie hadn't been working and that we would be calculating that. He knew that there were other perspectives, such as when the niece was working, because the niece helped her out. One of the concerns at the end was, do we get a release from the niece as well? And he said, absolutely not. So I suspected that that was also waiting in the wings. But that was something that, we disclosed to the daughter Diane's lawyers, and they said it's a risk we can take, and so that was okay. But it's fine if people want, most lawyers really have a terrific perspective on the law that surrounds their case and the relative merits of their case. What I bring to the table generally is being able to reach the client at an emotional level and have them understand the relative merits or risks of their case. The lawyer has talked him or herself blue in the face, but has not reached the client on a human level.
Now, did you get an opportunity after the settlement amount had been agreed to observe the effect of that settlement on either client?
Interestingly enough, yes, and that's a great question because I had not thought about that aspect of it. At the end, daughter Diane was had recovered and was had come back into being more of a businesswoman and everything else, and she was disgusted but accepting. Caregiver Annie was crying when I went back into the room. Now, remember, I can't talk to her. I can't say, "Hey, what's up?" And I think it was crying from relief. Her whole body language had been very tense throughout the entire, it was a long day too. Her body language was far more relaxed, but she was actually crying. I mean, really, like a box of tissues crying. So I think it was just relief that this was over.
Well, that may very well have been the case, and it's really a shame, in my perspective, of that you weren't able to talk to the client. I had a mediation years ago, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but at the end of the day, when both attorneys had told me in the beginning and throughout the day, don't have these people in the same room, they'll kill each other. At the end of the day, when nobody was leaving, this is an in-person mediation, nobody was leaving after the agreement is signed. And I went into the room and I said to the client, is there something I can help you with? Something else that you need to get off your chest or I can help you with? Well, long story short, it turns out they actually wanted to talk to each other. I arranged that. And not over the objection of the attorneys, but at the direction of the two clients, I arranged that. And when I left the room where they met by themselves with me and no attorneys, they were planning a barbecue at their home, one of their homes, getting together, etc. One of the takeaways here is there may have been an opportunity missed by the attorneys' attitude of don't communicate with the client. If the idea, in my view, if the idea is to help the client get past the conflict, cutting off the client from the process as the attorney did is going to undermine that client's goal.
Absolutely. I agree with you completely, Len. And one of the most satisfying things about our work is helping people like you say, get past the conflict in a sense, at least of resolution puts it behind me. And my goal in the beginning of mediation, I spent probably longer than most in that initial meeting with each side, is I always say, this is your chance to tell your story. And if we're successful here today, it's the last time you have to tell your story.
Right.
You know? And so that's the goal, really, is to tell, let people talk about what happened to them. And also to put the whole thing into perspective. What were you doing then? How was your mother? What was she like? In other words, this is just fingernail on the entire body of your mother's life. You know, don't let this be your major memory of her. I didn't have the chance to do that with caregiver Annie, but right. I wished I could have.
Well, your goal is not just settling a lawsuit, but resolving a conflict in people's lives. Yeah. And we're going to wrap up now because we're out of time. But as we wrap up, once again, I got to thank you profusely for agreeing to come on the show. I look forward to reading even more of your novels and seeing them on the big screen and and all those other things and listening to them. I think you also have a podcast episode of dramatic readings of the novels, which is fantastic. So as we wrap up, how can listeners contact you to learn more about you, your mediation, or book a mediation?
For mediations, please go directly to adrservices.com and contact them, and they will be more than happy to set you up with me. If you scroll down to my name at the ADR Services website, you'll get all of the information about me, and ADR Services is happy to book me for your mediation. If you're interested in knowing more about my books, on the other hand, it's ClaudiaHLong.com, and you can get links to the podcast, which is the first five chapters of Nine-Tenths of the Law, read by real actors. I mean, they're all playing the parts. It's incredible. That will be revving up soon because book three in that series is called Sisters at an Exhibition, and it comes out in August of 2026.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podclips.io, powered by Infogen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.